Welcome, Paul.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to present some information about the standardized bycatch reporting methodology. I have two parts to my presentation today. The first of which is a report, a general outline of the completion of the review process, and that in January we presented to the councils information about the proposed allocation of observer coverage, and then followed that by a comment period for which people had the opportunity to respond. And then the second part that I'll be talking about today is the three-year review, which is another part of the SBRM package. Now, I know that SBRM is oftentimes one of the most exciting topics at the council meeting, but it's a good time to catch up on your email and so forth. But it's also important to consider that this is one of the major entrees into ecosystem-based management, that, you know, by quantifying the magnitude of the interactions, the removals that occur among fisheries, it's important. It's a way of improving the stock assessments by more validly characterizing the total removals that are occurring. And finally, it's an important aspect of understanding and assessing management options that that the council proposals, and in an attempt to try to mitigate or offset the damage that occurs through discarding. I want to acknowledge my colleagues, particularly Susan Wigley and Jessica Blaylock, who assisted in developing these reports, really the engines behind this, and also acknowledge Amy Van Atten at the center and her staff and the observers. And then finally, just to recognize the importance of and thank the fishermen who take the observers out and bring them back safely. It's a very important part of fisheries management and really kind of central to, I think, the work of the council. So what I'd like to do is first, we have a report. It is available, which is a summary report of the comments. The web link is listed on the screen in front of you, and it is available. I'll go through the specific comments received from the councils, as well as two NGO groups that responded. The first is the Mid-Atlantic's comments on the initial allocation of observer coverage. One of the sort of overarching problems of the allocation of observer coverage is that most of it is allocated to New England groundfish. Now that plays well here, not so well when we go south. But the one of the major concerns within the Loligo fishery is the coverage associated with monitoring butterfish that brought up, and then the Mid-Atlantic was concerned about the sort of the predominance of coverage oriented towards both catch shares as well as other New England groundfish priorities. New England was strongly in favor of the high coverage associated with New England groundfish, and not unexpectedly. And then there was also some requests for details on the compensation rate associated with monitoring of coverage in the scallop fleet. So we do have additional comments, summaries on that. The Pew Environmental Group and Choir both had major concerns about the midwater trawl, the purse seine and small mesh otter trawl fleets, particularly with respect to their catch of river herring and other species. So we have all of the information associated with their comments are on the posted on the web page. Our response includes, and I believe everybody has a copy of that in their briefing booklet, which talks about not only the issues of of funding, the overall concerns about compliance. We acknowledge and note that monitoring of fisheries is different from monitoring of fleets, and SBRM is oriented towards monitoring of fleets because that's what is observable in advance of a trip. You know that it's a large mesh trip, otter trawl. You don't know that it's you don't have a list in advance of whether it's a groundfish trip or a monkfish trip or some other species in the Mid-Atlantic. The industry-funded coverage rates and compensation issues are an ongoing concern, and this is kind of a real-time management situation that's based on the total amount allocated to monitoring within the scallop fleet, and then of course the number of days and so forth is important because it's the balance between a compensation rate that attracts observers versus one that repels observers. So you just don't want to introduce a bias in that way. In terms of the overall total, this did get messed up a little bit, but just have different versions of PowerPoint here. It didn't even put the NIMS logo up there, which I was surprised, you know. So the agency funded totals, we're anticipating approximately 11,000 observer days, of which 10,650 days will be directly applicable to the SBRM species. There are a number of days which are allocated for protected species. So that's about 300 days, which they do not provide direct information on finfish discards. Industry-funded totals increased slightly from 3,254 to 3,354, 100 days increase. And when I refer to industry-funded totals, this is, of course, referring to the scallop fleet. So essentially, there were about 100 days difference between what we had in the previous allocations. The differences are listed on the screen in front of you, and essentially, we, in response to the Mid-Atlantic's concerns about the monitoring of the Lolligo fleet and particularly butterfish bycatch, we were able to add another 100 days to the coverage for Mid-Atlantic small mesh otter trawl fleet. Much of that increase was taken from the New England large mesh otter trawl fleet. Just in noting there that all of the species within the New England large mesh otter trawl fleet have coefficients of variation less than 30%. So there's no violation of the code. And in fact, in the Mid-Atlantic small mesh otter trawl fleet, the coverage ensures a coefficient of variation of about 35% at its maximum. So most of the species are covered very well. The industry-funded fleet, again, as I noted, was up about 100 days at sea. So this is essentially completing the process of proposing, reviewing, and sort of summarizing the observer coverage that began April 1st and will continue through March 31st of 2012. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them on this part. The second part of the presentation refers to information that is in a forthcoming document on the estimates of discard rates. So,
are there any specific questions for Paul at this point? David?
Paul, given the many masters you have to serve here in two councils and numerous fisheries, has any analysis been done on what amount of coverage is needed in the large mesh otter trawl fleet to get the desired precision and accuracy for discard rates and compliance? I mean, do we need this very high level of number of trips, or could it be something less and be reassigned to some of the other fisheries?
Yes, it could be significantly less in the if there was not major changes going on in the fleet. One of the things that the SBRM is designed to achieve is a standard level precision across all species within all fleets. So one of those fleets would be the large mesh otter trawl fleet for vessels departing from New England ports. So that's the fleet, the fleet coverage. There are different requirements associated with monitoring species and monitoring discarding in real time, and those demands are much higher typically. So since this is the first year of the catch share program, those kinds of demands took precedence over the nominal sampling requirements associated with monitoring of the precision per se, and also it's important that the precision targets, the way this amendment was crafted, is associated with species groups within an FMP. So for a single species FMP, such as dogfish or monkfish, it's oriented toward a single species. When you talk about groundfish, it's a species aggregate, or squid, mackerel, butterfish. You have four species in that group. So it's a different set of criteria than those that you would use for specifically monitoring a target species. So thanks. Long answer, but I hope it answers your question.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it just strikes me as, you know, given the number of fisheries we got to cover and the limited number of observable trips we can do, that if we had to assign some away from the large mesh otter trawl in order to get better precision and accuracy in some of the other fisheries, that might be something that we have to consider in trade-offs.
Yeah, that would. I mean, if you look at Table 3, I think in your handout, it has the expected coefficients of variation under the revised days at sea. So, and that's line 8. I have a hard time seeing it too. I'm over 50, so I have a hard time seeing that myself. But all those small numbers in there, most of them are less than 10% coefficients of variation for those groups. So they are very precisely measured within the otter trawl fleet.
Any other questions for Paul before he moves on? Okay, Paul.
Okay. Thanks, John. The next task is that SBRM had a three-year review provision in it, and it indicated that every 3 years that the regional administrator and the science director would appoint appropriate staff to work with the executive directors of the councils to review the discard estimates and prepare an overall report assessing the effectiveness of the program. What I'm presenting to you today is part one of that task, and I just so there's some clarification here in terms of what years I'm referring to. When I'm referring to, and it's hard to believe this is the third year I've been providing this information to the councils, but this SBRM 2009 refers to information obtained between July 2007 and June 2008. The 2010 SBRM refers to information from July 2008 through June of 2009 and so forth. So every time we compute an estimate of the relative precision of the discard estimates and make a recommendation on C-day allocations, underlying that piece of information are estimates of total discards. And today I'll be presenting an overview of some of that information and then letting you know that within 2 weeks we will have a center reference document, about a 200-page document that will have the details on that. It'll have the actual catch estimates by species as well, you know, so and those catches are by discard and kept. So you'll have a fully, fairly comprehensive estimate of discards for each fleet, and then also you can look at it from two perspectives. One is from the species perspective, which fleets are taking what groups of species, and then from the fleet perspective, what fleets are landing and discarding species. So it'll be a very, I think, useful one, and I'll try to give you some background or insight as to what that thing will include. So this first report, which is the in press as a center reference document, will include a summary of the recent levels of observer coverage, the percent of trips covered, and a summary of the encounter rates of species. And by that I mean that when you get on a particular vessel, you have a particular probability of observing, say, monkfish discards or monkfish landings. There's no assurance that you'll see that. So this is what I mean by encounter rates. It'll have an estimate of the coefficients of variation, those measures of precision, and then finally an estimate of the total discards associated with each fleet. This next slide may be too small to see in its entirety, but it's essentially gives you the timeline, and this is, you know, so we basically have data from July through June of a particular year as about a three-month post-processing of that, which is, you know, data entry and quality control, auditing, and so forth. And that's followed by about a month and a half or so analysis period, and then that forms the basis for presentation of material in January and in the following year. So the January 9 information, the SBRM 2009, reflects information that was collected in July 2007 through June of 2008. So we're not doing calendar years, we're not doing fishing years. So it is the basis and for these sets of estimates. Over time, the numbers of fleets have increased. The plan has been responsive to the identification of new fleets or further subdivisions of existing fleets. We've gone from 44 to 52. There is a filtering process that occurs in terms of identifying this process, and there's a sort of baseline sea days, and so if you covered every single incidence of discarding within every single fishery, you would need on the order of about 52,000 days at sea. Now, a lot of that is driven by the need to establish precise estimates of unimportant quantities. So there are scallops that get caught in gill nets, and although that is a discard event, it's a very unimportant in terms of the overall dynamics of scallops, and it's very unimportant to the gill net fleet as a whole. So we filter out that information, and it's not a haphazard filtering. It's essentially looking at it with respect to defining a set that constitutes the majority of the removals associated with that species. So we look at the set of species or set of fleets that constitute 95% of the discards and 98% of the total catch of that species. So we're only excluding that last 5% of discards and that last 2% of total catch. And so when you do that analysis, you come up with, you've got about a fourfold reduction in the days required, reducing it down to around 15,000 to 20,000 days at sea here. Just a placebo here. The funded sea days, of course, is the constraint, and depending upon the year, the priorities, and so forth, we tend to be short on the order of 5,000 to 7,000 days at sea. And there's also additional constraints associated with it, as I mentioned before. Mid-Atlantic funding is under the guidance we receive does not get as great a coverage rate. So in terms of what we end up finally covering, it's on the order of about over these three SBRM years, there's been effectively a doubling of the coverage rate, and a lot of this was due to sector implementation. So the document will have summaries by fleet and give you some insights. The graphs are there just for visually to show you that the coverage rates do vary by fleet, but overall the coverage rate in terms of trips ranges between 2% and 5%. Scallop dredge fisheries in the access areas and midwater trawls in New England had the highest coverage rates, exceeding in some instances 30-40% coverage. In terms of the percent of days covered, the percentages actually go up. The average coverage rate in terms of actual days at sea as opposed to trips per se is between 4% and 6% coverage rate. So there's pretty good coverage across a lot of fleets. Of course, there are fleets that get very little coverage still, and so that's one that we don't have enough information to actually constitute a sample coverage rate. And in those instances, what we do is recommend pilot coverage so that there's a basis for getting the preliminary information, the pilot information that allows you to make a more objective criteria. So the next slide, we do, contrary to some concerns, we do, the observer program monitors all species caught. Between the last 3 years, there were 312 unique species identified by weight and 42 separate species by numbers. We do record the disposition, whether they're kept or discarded, and also the reasons for why they're discarded. So there's a great deal of information there. And then the 14 SBRM species of both fish and invertebrates, they represent about 90% of all the total weight of species recorded by the Northeast Fishery Observer Program. So we are getting a very high fraction of observed coverage there. As I mentioned, the percent coverage rate varies by fleet. So for this shows just several examples of longline and otter trawl gear, and it looks at the large mesh groundfish species, and the coverage rates and vary from like 30% to 100% in terms of their numbers of trips or percent of trips that actually observe these species groups. And the reason this is important, again, it's reinforcing that notion that you allocate on the basis of observable properties of the of fleets. You cannot allocate specifically to fishery management plan or target species or things of that sort. There are some instances where they're one and the same. A scallop dredge vessel is going to catch scallops, but a large mesh otter trawl is going to catch multiple things. So this gives you some basic information about interactions among fleets, and again, provides you some way of accounting for the efficacy of allocating observer coverage to a particular fleet. So I'll move on from that. The other thing in the discard estimates that, that will be in this report that you'll be able to review shortly here, they're indicative, but they're not the definitive estimates and of discard estimates there. By that I mean that they are, for one, they're dealing with a blended year. They're a June to July. Or July to June, excuse me, basis, so that they won't necessarily correspond to that. They're also based on vessel trip report data as opposed to the dealer data. So that oftentimes is a subset of the total landings information. So they'll be slightly lower than they would be if they were based on the things. And again, this is all a data timing issue. The data, in order to do that allocation, are not available at the time we need to prepare this report and provide the feedback to the council. So there's within the report, there are a numbers of graphs which will illustrate the percentage of discards for each of the SBRM managed species groups, and of course the species that are discarded in the highest quantities are skates and dogfish, oftentimes more than 80% of the total removals are discarded. This is a tremendous waste of resources, and it's one that I hope that this report will help identify those areas where there are problems of excessive discarding. There'll be some things in the report that may at first blush seem surprising. For example, red crab. You know, in the 2010 indicating a very high proportion of discarding on the highlighted graph there, and the reason for that, of course, is that this is a males-only fishery, so the discarding of red crab reflects the selective properties of that fishery to orient towards male as opposed to females. So. We also have numbers of perspectives on the problem. So if you look at, you know, which fleets contribute most to the discards, so you can look at it from the species group perspective, and the second is to look at it from the fleet perspective, which species are being discarded in the greatest quantities. So I'll just give you a couple of quick examples using some simple pie diagrams, and I'll mercifully cut this short as if this, looking at the chair, if he gives me the hook here. But the process is one of looking at the percentage of landings and discards, and then for each of the discarded species to look at its distribution by fleet or by species if we're looking at a fleet picture here. So let's look at the otter trawl in the mid-Atlantic, the large mesh. Roughly 48% of the species that are caught are actually kept. 54% are discarded. Most of that discard is skates. 65% of that pie chart there that is are skates, and then dogfish are 8%. And so I have the values listed under the graph there. There's about a 5% discard rate of large mesh groundfish, and then the other species constitute FMP species constitute about 5%. There's about 13% are non-FMP type species. So that might be weak fish or other ones. So there'll be a series of graphs like that, and then you can look at the patterns over time. And so here's the surprising consistency. This is, again, for that Mid-Atlantic. This happened to be New England. I'm sorry. But it does reveal kind of a similar pattern, roughly about 60% landings and 40% discards over time. If we look at fluke scup and sea bass for the Mid-Atlantic, or fluke scup and sea bass as a species group, and look at the fleets that are discarding them, about 36% of the fluke scup and sea bass that are landed are actually are actually landed. So 36% are discarded. Most of that is coming from otter trawls. There's the small mesh otter trawl in the Mid-Atlantic is about 23%, and there are some scallop dredge discards occurring as well. The fluke scup and sea bass again is about 60 to 70% of the fluke scup and sea bass are kept, and about 30 to 35 to 25% are discarded. And then skates are interesting, of course, and one where the kept proportion is only about 25%. Discards are about 76% in terms of the work. The large mesh otter trawls constitute about 33% of that total, but the scallop dredge, both in New England and the Mid-Atlantic, constitute 24 and 18% of the totals. So again, this is a species that where improvements in the ability to manage it, identifying the magnitude of these discards is a way of improving the economic value of the resource. That I think this report will go a long way towards allowing that to happen. The Pac-Man-like pie diagrams there, where most of the fish are being discarded. And then there'll be some other performance measures there. So this looks at I don't expect you to see anything on this, but we look at that same information by scallop dredges, midwater trawls, gillnets, otter trawls, and long lines. We get some idea of how well we're doing in terms of the proportion of species that have sufficiently precise estimates of discard. Roughly 70% of the species that are species groups that are being monitored have coefficients of variation less than 30%. So that means that, and not surprisingly, most of those are in New England. However, for scallop dredges, for example, the species that are taken within the scallop dredge, 15 have coefficients of variation less than 30%, and only 3 exceed that. So overall, the report card is very good in terms of the species and sort of the monitoring by fleets. If you look at it from the perspective of the species, just quickly to the one you can see, fluke, scup, and sea bass taken in a total of 17 different fleets. And of those that are important fleets, 12 of the 17 have sufficiently high precision or low coefficients of variation. Monkfish is measured very well. The report does have a separate information that will be relevant to the earlier discussion on monkfish discarding patterns and so forth. Spiny dogfish and skate are both measured in about 19 fisheries, but There are about 11 fisheries where dogfish are not monitored at that same precision target. So this report provides that overall stratification scheme for federally managed species in the North Atlantic or in the Northeast region. The species, again, I mentioned that there may be some disparity between the reports that are actually in the stock assessment reports versus these totals. The totals won't change that much, but the partitioning will, particularly when you're interested more specifically in stocks, such as Gulf of Maine cod, George's Bank cod, and so forth. There's additional processing of that information. And again, I mentioned earlier that these data use special trip report data as opposed to the landings data by the landings data from the dealer records. And again, there's a bias associated with that because the dealer records are more universal or do incorporate more of the total landings. And then all of these estimates are based on 100% discard mortality. Now, that's not true across the board for all species. For example, in dogfish, we do have different rates of mortality that are used in the assessments. For other species, you know, it highlights an important need to identify the estimates of discard rates. And, you know, that will be a topic, of course, coming up in the Gulf of Maine cod assessment because of the large fraction of removals that are associated with recreational harvesting and so forth. So, again, the one of the things I think that are important in terms of SBRM is that it is a system-wide and it's a comprehensive program. It does look at the totality of fishing effort and also the species responsibility. So it does have a synthetic approach to it, and I think it provides a rational approach for this process. We hope to improve it, and that's the purpose of this continuing three-year review, and we look forward to your input on that process. And then, of course, there are all the vagaries associated with the overall magnitude of funding and the directionality of that funding. You know, particularly as it's decided by external measures that the council wishes to. Employ as part of management measures, but you know, I think it does provide a way of incorporating the information in a way that I hope provides a transparent process to the council in terms of how the allocations decisions are made and then how we modify them in response to not only your feedback but also changes that occur over time in the fisheries. So the report itself is about 200 some pages. I have an early draft of it with me, but it will be available. I just got word it should be available within 2 weeks. So we'll let the councils know that when that report is available. And I think you'll find it interesting as a way of sort of looking, investigating some of the interactions across fisheries. So with that, I'll say I'm done. And look forward to any questions I might be able to answer. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Questions for Paul, Mary Beth?
Just a comment and a question. I do look forward to the report because I think we've expressed some concerns on the, the 3 years of data that we've gotten is that the volume of it is so significant that it's all good information, but it's hard to put the pieces together and look at the fleets and then try to think about how we would apply that to certain specific fisheries and then it's just that the volume of information is tremendous. So I've really been looking forward to this report and hoping that it does give us information that would help us better manage or identify issues. And as you pointed out, you know, if you look at skate discards, I mean, what can we do as a management entity to try to encourage, you know, landing of fish versus discarding of fish. So that's great. And then just one question. A couple of times you did mention you were using VTR data versus dealer data. And I just wanted to clarify for myself to what extent the data that we're going to be looking at in the report is based on observer data versus VTR data. And I was just a little confused.
Okay, sorry I didn't clarify that. We use a ratio estimator to estimate the discard rates. To estimate the discard total, the raising factor, that was what so we have a discard to total kept as our measure of the discard rate. The measure of total kept that we expand it when we try to raise it to the entire fishery is based on the total landings as measured by the vessel trip reports. When that vessel trip report total is augmented by state landings, when it's augmented by late reports and so forth, all of that stuff folds up and ends up being a bigger total than we see at the time we do these reports, which is in August of the year preceding the April information. So the actual estimates will tend to be slightly larger than the totals that we see in this report, but the difference relates to the difference between what we have in terms of VTR estimates at the time we do this report versus the VTR or the dealer data that are available usually in March of the following the calendar year. So
just to follow up and make sure I have that right, then you're using the VTR data as your expansion factor to total landings.
That's right. Yep.
Okay, and then the one thing is, you know, when I look back at the reports, you know, the annual reports that you've been providing, is that, you know, it's a whole bunch of information, lots and lots of tables, really not summary information per se. So would we expect that in this report, and I'm sure in the 200 pages, we're going to see, again, a lot of tables of information, and you showed us some examples, but there'll be some conclusions and summaries that are made about where we stand?
Is that right. I mean, it's our attempt is to be a document of record to provide the estimates associated with varying fleets and varying species and so forth. We're avoiding the tendency to be sort of judgmental or interpretive of whether or not this is a good thing or not. I mean, if you say 76% of the skate which are landed are ultimately discards, in many ways that can be seen as a bad thing. It's a very inefficient use of gas, fuel, and people's time. But we're not making that second step to say, you know, is making a judgment call on it. There is that the information, and I think what it will help in is for decisions that are made by the council. You know, you can quantify things so that rather than do them purely by a limited quantity of data, you might have a more synthetic ability to sort of characterize fleets and also to look across fleets and to say establish priorities that may be associated with actual magnitude as opposed to perception of various quantities. So I guess we're not going to go the judgmental route on these things, but just simply provide those kinds of factual things. So, at their essence, they're like me, basically a dull guy, type thing. But you know, they do provide that information that, you know, when you're making decisions, should be sort of central to it. So
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Would you go to slide 36? Right. In this slide, you show that the SBRM analysis assumes 100% discard mortality. Why is that so, and what are the implications of that assumption for the SBRM analysis?
Well, one reason is that there are relatively few species for which we have reasonably good discard estimates available for them. Discard mortality is, as you know, notoriously difficult to estimate in terms of getting a general study which is applicable to something beyond the particular experimental circumstances under which it was collected. So, when we do have those, we apply them in the stock assessments. In this context, we have not used them, mostly from a matter of consistency, so that they all have the same basis. You know, they can be applied after the fact, but they're not employed in this.
Okay, so I guess I'm still struggling to understand the implications of that assumed 100% discard mortality, especially in the context of skate discards, since this skate discards appears to be quite significant in a number of fisheries, as we might expect, because of triple limits and abundance is so high. So is that this 100% discard mortality for skates, is that the current assumption we used in the assessments? And once again, does it have any implication for the SBRM analysis, good or bad?
In terms of the SBRM analysis, it does not. It simply, this is a matter of record. It documents that which was observed and that which was discarded, and tries to expand that to the total. The fate of those fish. If they survive, then implications for overall biomass of skates suggest that the numbers are actually less, because you're seeing those fish again, either as landings or as future discards. So the consequences of individual species survival rates are very important to the assessment, but they're not necessarily important to this exercise in terms of characterizing which fleets are catching particular species. They do provide a measure of potential in that, you know, here's a measure. It's sort of like when they explore for oil, they have estimates of undiscovered oil reserves. This is an estimate of something that is of value that might be better utilized through different types of fisheries management processes or principles or everything else. So that's the purpose of identifying these in terms of magnitude. It's not to try to downweight them on the basis of an assumed or an estimated discard rate, but simply to give you some idea on what the rates of encounter are and what the total magnitude is relative to the landings that are being allowed.
Dr. Jim.
Yeah, Paul, this was part one of the three-year report, and I think it would be worth just taking a minute to describe to the council what will be coming in part two later in the year.
Part two is a more analytical component to this process, and the purpose of that is to basically look at the analytical basis for these estimates. I know that they're a source of controversy within sectors, and so that will be one aspect of it. Are we focusing on the right metrics of discard? And then I think one that is particularly important and relevant is that the landscape under which SBRM was originally developed relies on a stratified random sampling design in which you can use the previous year's fishing patterns as a predictor of what we're likely to see in a subsequent year. When you have systems where fishery management is changing dramatically, such as the implementation of sectors, that sort of premise doesn't necessarily hold across years anymore. And in response to that, the allocation of observer samples is based on pre-trip notification system. So the call-in program is the selective property. So that's a systematic sampling program that is changing the basis under which these estimates are being computed. The other aspect of that is for the in the Loligo fishery, vessels that intend to catch more than 2,500 pounds of Loligo call in and are designated as via the and selected for sampling on the basis of a pre-trip notification. So we want to make sure that we're getting a statistically reliable estimate that we can use to characterize the observer program. In the future, too, the economic incentives are changing, so that you want to make sure that you're getting an unbiased estimate of observer. So if the state trooper is sitting in the back seat of your car, you're probably not going to speed. Is that also what's going on with the observer? Is there a Heisenberg effect associated with the presence of an observer on board? So we want to try to do some cross-checking to see, are we getting that a reliable estimate of actual behavior, or is the observer being taken for a short ride and not seeing what's actually going on? So there's all those kinds of things underlying this analytical review that I hope we'll be able to address.
David.
Paul, on the pie charts, I have I have two problems. Neither pair of glasses will work on the big screen or the small, but basically you have the who and the how much. But I think to managers, the most important question may be the why. In other words, taking one of the slices of the pie and breaking it down and saying, how much is because it's over a trip limit? How much is it because the fishery's closed? How much is it because it's too small? I mean, there's some things we can do something about and some things we can't. And knowing the why is the part we need to know in order to figure out if we can help solve the problem.
Yes, exactly, and I think we can provide that additional information. So in this case, let's take the Mid-Atlantic large mesh otter trawl fleet on the board here. So 65% of the discarding of the species discarded are skates. So I suspect that may be either due to a trip limit, or there was not capacity for them. They were targeting something else. So, and you would know better than I do on other reasons why that. Those kinds of things could then be split off from each of these sort of percentages, and you could do another set of pie charts from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do collect that information. I'm pretty sure. I mean, people come up and they ask it, did you throw the dogfish over? Well, I threw them over because I'm over the trip limit, or I threw them over because I don't have a market, or I threw them, and that would be the I think that will be useful information for us at some point. We don't need it perhaps right now, but when we identify fisheries where there appear to be issues, then we're going to have to delve deeper than just who and how much.
Right, right. I think what would be nice, and I'm not sure technically what that would entail, but if we could have this information as sort of a drill down web-based product that, you know, people could look at and distill. One of the concerns, so to speak, is that you need to be careful about, you know, revealing proprietary information. And so, you know, we're very sensitive to that. In fact, this report will not have some ones that are obvious pie charts that, you know, might want to see because they are proprietary information. So we'll be trying to be, you know, so you need to build in that protection for something that would allow, say, council or individuals or subcommittees an ability to do a sort of an interactive probing of the information. So it'd be something to work on.
Anyone else on the council? We have 5 minutes left. We'll go to the audience. Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. I'd like to follow up a little bit on Dr. Pierce's thoughts as far as the assumption of 100% mortality with these species. While I realize it could be difficult to actually put a figure to any of the species for any of the fisheries, is there some way that we might be able to assign a level of confidence that there is some survivability for each species within each fishery? And let me explain what, with one example anyways. With scallops, the bycatch is going to be a problematic issue for them, as it is with yellowtail, skate, and monkfish. And I firmly believe that all three of those species, or any of the flatfish that they catch, there is a high level of survivability within that fishery, particularly now with the shorter toes. But it remains a real sticking point with the bycatch for, say, southern New England yellowtail within the lightship area. Yeah. If the council had the confidence or the opportunity to have a red, yellow, or green, if you can't do a percentage number or an expected percentage number, that might allow them to take a different view of that particular fishery or any other fishery for that matter.
I think you bring up an excellent point that that an ability to sort of get the overall perspective is important. And one way you can do that is through interactions with fishermen, to get a sense of it. For in the sense of dogfish, for example, there was sort of a perspective that, you know, the dogfish that come up in the light toe are pretty much all going to survive. If they come up in a sausage roll, probably all going to be dead. So 50% was the roughly the, I mean, we did a lot more talking, but that was about the level. So discarding of or estimation or some sense of that some of the yellowtail flounder in the lightship are coming up as and surviving is something that could be done. There can be a variety of studies that could do this work. I mean, I think it's extremely important, particularly where you have one species acting as a limiting factor on another species. So, I mean, the ones that come to mind are certainly haddock in the herring fishery, yellowtail in the scallop fishery, and butterfish in the loligo fishery. All of these things are one species is a limiting factor on another, and those would be I think highly desirable to have those as sort of the top-ranked research kinds of activities.
Well, thank you, Paul. The thing that gets me on this is that without some sort of guidance, the council is not going to be able to use those assumptions when they're looking at the plans or designing the plans. So we really can't sit back and wait for some sort of surveys or studies to go on. I mean, one of the easiest ones was what I think, anyways, as a former scholar, would have been when we had our first access to the closed area too. I suggested we take paper punches and just punch a fin mm-hmm. on a yellowtail. If you get a yellowtail up with two or three rides on it, you know, it's pretty obvious that it's surviving at least for a period of time.
Right, right.
And I know that some of the studies that have been done are pretty in-depth, but I don't know how they would reflect back on the fishery. But I think that the council and the industry deserve some sort of reminder that, you know, not every caught fish is a dead fish. And if that's the case, then we ought to be landing them. Mm-hmm. Think about it.
Right, yeah.
It is kind of a catch-22 if you say you got to throw them back because some of them will survive, but then you count them all as dead. You have a little bit of a problem there. So thank you.
Okay, it's 12 o'clock. We'll break for lunch, an hour and 15 minutes. And when we come back, we'll take up Herring Amendment 5. 5. 5. 5. 5. 5. 5. 5. 5. 5. 5. 5. 5. 5.